This is an ABC podcast.
This is Nijan Footy with Sam Wykes and Tinidar Arona on ABC Radio Australia.
Malolale and welcome to Sam and T's Summer Sit-Downs. This is our special summer series where we chat to a Nijan footy player for a little bit longer than usual and get to know their story through family and footy. Plus, they get to program a few songs. My name is Sam Wykes and with me each week is my Cook Island koi, Tinidar Arona T.
Kia ora, Sammy. What a ride we've had so far chatting to legends like Joe Ngolovel, Mel Kawa, Will Hopoate, and new school stars like Silka Pesipalu, Jasmine Tupou-Witchman, Sala Tonga Tuki, and more. You can catch up with them too if you missed it via the Nijan Footy podcast or the ABC Pacific website. Who we got this week, Sammy?
Well, T, we are very lucky to have another superstar joining us on our summer sit-down today. She's a two-time Super W champion with the Fijian Drua, represented the Fijiana national team. She's played rugby across the globe with stints in France, Japan and New Zealand, and her cultural roots lay deep in Te Level Fiji. Let's welcome to Nijan Footy, Jade Coates, Bulavanaka Jade.
Well, thank you for having me.
Nah, no worries. Thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate your time. Look, we're going to get stuck into, firstly, your family, your cultural roots. I said you're from Te Level in Fiji. What do you know about your village over there?
Yeah, so born and raised in New Zealand, but have always been connected to Fiji from a young age because my father was born in Fiji. Him and my bumbu, my grandmother, are from Te Levu Nananu, and I've known that since the day I was born, so I'm always been connected to it. Anytime I go to Fiji, I try and get to the village to see Tatavili and the family that are there. But yeah, it's always been a known thing in my life, like it wasn't something that's all of a sudden just appeared. But yeah, always been connected to Nananu and very proud to be from Te Levu.
How good. And whereabouts in New Zealand were you born, and what was your upbringing like?
Yeah, so born and raised in the Waikato region. So I live in a small town called Matamata. Born and raised on a farm my whole life. My parents are dairy farmers, and I'm very grateful for that, especially growing up. Definitely got three siblings, so growing up on the farm, being the youngest, I kind of got dragged here, there, everywhere. Learned a lot from my older siblings, that's for sure. But truly grateful. I've been pretty blessed with a pretty good upbringing here in New Zealand. My parents have definitely worked hard for that, but especially my dad coming up from Fiji to New Zealand, man, it's a blessing really, and I get the best of both worlds of New Zealand and Fiji, which is pretty cool. Not many get to say that. Growing up on the farm, I think, taught me so much and made me who I am today. Like, forever grateful for my parents, that's for sure.
Sounds like a very unique upbringing, you know, living on a farm but also having that connection to Fiji. When you were kids, did you travel back to Fiji, you and your siblings, many times?
Yes. So I wouldn't say heaps. Like we went back when I was a bit younger for the first time. My parents took the older two siblings first, just because it's expensive traveling with four kids. And also, like, we wanted to be at an age where we could remember it. So the older siblings went, and then us younger two went later when we were a little bit older. And yeah, I've been going there quite a few times. When my sister was there playing over there, I went to visit her quite a few times. And my parents, we were pretty lucky. My parents brought some family to New Zealand for quite a few months, so if we weren't there, we managed to get some family here. And Bumbuwati and Sally, they looked after us in Bumbuliku, so it was like we kind of got the Fiji living here too, having them here. So been pretty lucky.
Yeah, what was your most memorable moment as a child about having your bumbum in New Zealand and growing up with her as a young child growing up there?
Yeah, like bumbum came over with my dad, and so I think probably the most memorable thing is like trying to explain to everybody. Everyone always used to ask me, like, Grandparents' Day, you take your bumbu to Grandparents' Day. And I just remember being, like, so proud of my bumbu, and I saw no different. Like, she was just my bumbu. But then everyone would be like, hey, like, whose Bumble's this? And here I am, this little blonde, blue-eyed girl. My Bumble's got, like, all Fijian features. And I think for me, I was growing up, I was always so proud of her. She was, like a little bit of a golden treasure, like a little gem to me that, like, I was so proud of and, like almost wanted to show her off a bit because I was so proud of her because I was so different. But, like, yeah, I think memes for her, like, even learning all, like, Fijian songs and hymns when we were younger, my dad loved playing the guitar, so learning stuff off her was really cool and, like, pretty lucky to have, I guess. And she's still alive now, which is even better. So, like, even my journey recently, like, it's really cool to share. And, yeah, like, recently in Oceania, she came and watched me play for Fiji, which is, like, that's pretty cool.
Man, I love how you just spoke about your grandmother like that. Your eyes lit up and you were just full of expression on how much she means to you. And I did want to actually touch on that because even when I started commentating some of your games while you were playing with the draw, I was like, what's her connection to Fiji? So I'm assuming you would get that a lot, but I know you just said you didn't really notice anything different. But from an identity point of view, was it hard that you had to keep explaining yourself that I am Fijian?
Yeah. It's probably one of the hardest things. I think I definitely don't look it, and that's like what everybody sees of me. Like a lot of people don't actually know me, and so I think that's the hardest thing from a young age, but more so in the most recent years. Once I like became playing for Fiji, everyone questions almost my identity and who I am. But like, one, I would never be there in the first place if I wasn't Fijian, and I'm damn proud. So, like, it has been a challenge. It definitely is. But for me, I know who I am. My family know who I am. And, like, that's kind of all that matters. Like, and the people that really want to get to know me know who I am. And, like, I think the more you're around me, like, damn, that girl's Fijian. Like,
yes.
I think I got the manji here, like, fro afro hair, and that's about it. I didn't get much of the other genetics. But I'm definitely proud of it.
And your father, does he have the Fijian features?
No, he's got, like, none of it either. He's got the blue eyes as well. But, like, so my dad's real father, we don't know who he is, but he obviously had very dominant features because we didn't get much, like, although when my dad grows his hair out when he was younger, he had the afro, like, and he, yeah, he's, if you walk past him in the street, you wouldn't even know. But once again, like, very proud of it.
Yeah.
Like, it's, yeah. I feel like, yeah. I think it's one of those things, like, doesn't necessarily see you on the outside. Like, especially nowadays, there's so many mixed blood. Like,
yeah.
People carry so many different ethnicities. It's pretty damn cool. So, yeah.
When you were younger and facing some of those challenges about identity and coming across maybe people's views, was there any ways that you dealt with them challenges? Like, did you speak to any certain people, like your father, for example?
Yeah, like, I think my sister was a really, like, probably in my recent years, my sister's somebody that's really helped me because she obviously represented Fiji first. And I'm not saying we're the first, but we're probably one of the fair few in the women's game, and not necessarily just in rugby, but representing Fiji in any sport that's quite like blonde hair, blue eyes, fair skin.
Yeah.
And so her going through her journey with the Fijiana Sevens, and like she had to overcome quite a few challenges too, it kind of made me think like it was possible. And like, I think she's been somebody that I've lent to about it all, like, because she's been there and done it and like been through some of that stuff. Definitely talked to my Bumbu about it a lot, but we know who we are, so that's kind of like, I don't lose sight of that, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's so, all that matters at the end of the day, right?
Exactly. And I want to actually,
like,
really thank you for explaining that so well and knowing who you are, because for myself, like I come across as being either Middle Eastern or Mexican, Māori, Kuki, I cover Fijian. I cover all markets. And for me, identity was a struggle growing up. And I guess that's probably why I kept my hair to say, no, I actually am Tongan as well. So by seeing yourself and the way you use your platform and the way you express yourself being Fijian, because you're totally right, there's a lot of other mixed-blooded people running around now, especially in sport, who wrestle with that identity. And am I from here? Am I from there? But yeah, I love what you do. So I really appreciate you sharing sharing that story.
I want to hear a bit more about the farm life and whose role was what with your siblings. Can you share a little bit about who done what on the farm when you were kids?
Yeah, growing up, so like I said, I was the youngest of four, so my brother's the oldest, okay, then two sisters and then me. And like, on the farm, we're dairy farmers, so it gets like, calving season's a pretty busy time when all the cows like giving birth and stuff. So I remember like my older siblings become like, my parents were so busy, they always looked after us, my older siblings, so I was like pretty lucky. But even like memories, like I'd go into the like calf sheds, my parents would be feeding all the calves late at night, and here I am with like my book from school homework with like a torch, like trying to complete the homework, because back in prime school, if you don't do your homework, that's so bad. But like, you think like, oh my gosh, I have to get this homework done. And I remember like one time I literally had like, there was like calf in my book, like in the corner, to school, and she was teaching my homework, and she was literally like, what is this? I was like, I'm so sorry, I had to get it done, but I was on the farm. And I was like so embarrassed, but I was literally like, that's like, my memories on the farm was like from, I don't know any different. Like, we learned how to drive on the farm, everything. And we like, the car was like spray painted different colors. Like, it was just like a paddock basher. But we used to like hop on the car. Like, I don't even know how old we were. And he used to literally like drive around the paddock, like, pulling the handbrake on, but like that was fun for us. Like, he was always like, oh, like somebody that always, like, we looked up to, so we thought we were so cool hanging out with our big brother.
So with your dad coming from Fiji, were they on a farm there and then automatically they just go, no, we're going to get a farm here in New Zealand?
No, like, they weren't, like, Tainui, there's a few farms, but he like wasn't on a farm. When he came here, he went to Te Kauwhata, and it's quite like a country area, and a lot of the boys at school were farmers, and so he, like, every weekend or after school, he'd go to his mate's house on the farm, and that's how he got into farming. Like, he ended up living at his mate's house because he just loved, like, you know, you come from Fiji and then you come here and it's like land, cows, like everything. So it wasn't even like anything. He just kind of, and then he had a like dream to one day like own his own farm, and that he would call it Tailevu Heights, and that's like what we live on now.
That's crazy. Oh,
true. So your farm is called Tailevu Heights, the village.
Tailevu Heights in New Zealand.
So from the taro patch or the coconut trees to the feeding calves and cows. And it's funny that that's probably the first excuse I've heard. You know, we've heard about the dogs chewing up the homework, but then now we've got kapu. We do ask all our guests about the values that they've learned from their parents, but I'm actually going to ask you, what are the values that you've learned from your siblings, your older sisters and your brother? Seems like you're very close to your siblings, and yeah, what are some of the values that you've learned from each of them?
Yeah, like, I'm pretty grateful with my siblings. Like, I think I've learned different things from different ones, like what we've gone through, I guess. But like, my sister, me and her are very close in age, so like, I played sport, kind of grew up closer together with her. Everyone used to think we were twins, kind of thing. But she's somebody that, she's just such a hard worker. She's somebody that, like, because we always in the similar sports teams, I looked up to her, like, wanted to be like her sort of thing. So she's probably someone that's like worked really hard. Even now, she's a really hard worker. She helps heaps on the farm and that side of it. And then I guess Brittany, I think I probably learned more like about resilience through her. She just always bounces back, always like just through her rugby as well. And then my brother, he had an accident in 2017. he playing rugby, which is crazy because you think rugby's life, and especially me in the upbringing I've had and playing rugby, you think rugby's everything. But it probably wasn't until we had something like that happen that we realised rugby is not life at all. Like, it's not everything. And I looked after him full time for 2 years, and doing that, just, man, like the challenges he went through, the stuff he overcame, and just like, he's my biggest motivation. So like, for him, the values he's taught me in life as such, probably more so outside of rugby, has been pretty like cool. And like, how what he's gone through didn't stop him. Like, if anything, it's motivated him more to live life and not just be worried about the small things a little bit. Like, don't take little things for granted.
I love that.
Yeah. How old, was he, and how old were you when all this happened?
I was first year out of high school, so I would have been 18 years old. I was meant to go study a week after it happened, but I chose my family and chose to, like, be with them and look after him. And he would have been 25 when it happened, 26.
Yeah, wow, okay. How did your...
So, like, my age now is when it happened, which is crazy because I was like, well, to think like that.
How did your dad take it when he found out the news and that his son, could no longer, move the way he used to?
Yeah, my dad, like, it's one of those things you'll, like, never forget the day. And my dad's somebody, like, he's a male, he's the man of the house, he's like the strong one, like, he didn't really show, you don't show like emotion, you kind of like hold it together. But on that day, we had to be the strong ones for him, like, because this is his only son, and doing like something we all love, like rugby's a big part of our life. It was such a shock, like, but we're all so positive. Like, I was the one that, oh, it's probably just precautionary, like, trying to, you want to be the like beat of the family to try and keep us, but he, like, as horrible it sounds, we were close family, but sometimes things like this have to happen for us to, like, families either makes or breaks families, but it, like, really pulled us closer together. And it's, yeah, my dad, like, I think, like, anybody, like, goes, when you go through things like that, it's like another side, like, his emotional side really came out. But at the same time, like, we're so proud of my brother and our family during that time. And, like, at the same time, we're so, like, we're lucky. Like, there's a lot of other people that go through much worse things and stuff. Like, but we still have my brother. He's still the same person. Physically different, but still the same person.
Yeah, I think when it comes to our Pacific culture, it's one of our pillars, our family and also faith, and then footy or food, you pick one, which you pick which comes first. But heard a lot of stories, and it reminds me of Fat Manu Brown's story as well, about how we come together to support our family no matter what, and we'll go to the end of the world for our family. With you finishing school and that moment of, okay, I'm going to look after my brother, my family now, and not go and choose not to go to study, was there any conversations that were held with you and other people or family members, or what was that? Yeah, what did that process look like?
For me, I didn't even think twice about it. Like, it wasn't even like an option. Like, I really struggled during the time because a lot of my friends didn't quite understand it. Like, everyone's going to uni, everyone's going and living that life, and they meet their new friends and party and, like, whatever. Like, but for me, I didn't even think twice, and I chose my family, and I wouldn't change it for a heartbeat, like, ever. Like, I would do it all over again. And I think the conversations weren't there, but amongst our family, it was kind of like, we just said this is what's going to happen. Like, my sister, she finished her job. She moved, she worked the farm with my dad so that I could be in, like, we could be in Auckland with my brother. We kind of all just, like, made little sacrifices, but to other people might have been big, but for us they were just little sacrifices so we could support each other through that time. And, like, even our wider community, we were so grateful for, like, the people. And, you know, it's all through rugby, the connections, which is crazy. Like, that just shows you what rugby's like. From people that my dad played rugby with when he was young to, like, you know, all these clubs came together to support us and stuff like that. So, like, for me, even just choosing to look after my brother, it was tough, don't get me wrong. Like, it was never easy. I was the sponge, like, you saw all the good, the bad, whatever, but I would never change it for the world. Like, that's something that I, yeah. And I know he would do that for me, or one of us, if it was in reverse. So,
final question before we get to your first song. After the accident, after looking after your brother for 2 years and just, you know, seeing the pain on your parents' face, especially your dad, how do you now define life?
I think kind of what I said, like, being in this professional environment, everyone sees you only as a rugby player. Like, they only see you as what they see on the TV, or they only see you as what you're, you know, in this ID of, like, but when you strip it all back, you're, like, actually human. Like, I think through all of this, like, we are all human. We all have our own story. But for me, like, just never take the little things for granted, and rugby is not everything. Like, that's my biggest thing. Rugby is not everything. Like, there's so much more to life than just rugby.
I love how you realise that now, because a lot of our athletes that are playing currently, and it's not until after when they retire, then they realise they get out of that bubble and they're like, oh, okay,
yeah,
we're more than rugby players and we need to figure out what we are ASAP. But yeah, thank you very, very much for sharing, you know, about your family and your brother and that journey that was taking place. And I'm sure, you know, you're all pretty proud of where, you know, how it all played out and the decisions that you've made. So, yeah, thanks for sharing. You're listening to Sam and T Summer Sit Downs, and this week we're joined by 2-time Fijian Drua Super W winner, Jade Coates. Let's get into your footy journey now. What was your earliest footy memories?
I went to Matamata Primary, so just the local primary school. I remember one lunchtime, I just used to watch the boys playing, like, rugby, and the caretaker of the school at the time, he, like, runs the rugby program. And my sister played, so I knew, you know, and you always want to do what everyone else did, but there was no girls playing, so I just sat and watched, like, the boys play at lunch. And some people probably thought that was weird. They're probably like, oh, she's checking out the boys. And he came up to me and asked me, he's like, hey, you can come and join, like, come and join with the boys. And I was like, super shy, like, and then that's kind of how I got into it. Like, this caretaker just gave me the opportunity to play, and he made it clear to the boys that I was allowed to play. And, like, to this day, he even contacts me now, like, on my journey, which is pretty cool. And he's got records of, like, when I played, like, how many tries you scored. Like, he's got the whole thing. But, yeah, I played for Matamata Primary, and, like, I was the only girl. And we played in, like, Cotter's Cup, like, Bowler's Cup. Like, it was, like, the competition in the area. But I remember it was, like, cold, frosty morning, like, ice mornings, barefoot. Yes. You're like, you're running on glass, your feet are like numb.
I have to ask you, were you watching the boys play because you're checking out the boys, or did you want to play rugby?
No, both. Maybe a little bit, but definitely was watching the rugby. You know when you, like, sit there watching, you want to play, but you just don't want to ask, or don't want to say things, so you're just sitting there watching.
You're going red, Jay. You're going red in the cheeks. So you're blushing. You're blushing. well, with your sister playing rugby first, I'm assuming that she would have, you know, broken the first conversations around females playing a contact sport. But for you to have probably an easier transition to play. But what was your parents' reaction when she decided that she wanted to play rugby and you wanted to play rugby?
To be honest, it wasn't even, like, a thing. Like, being a female playing rugby, we didn't even know there was anything wrong with it, or, like, it was different. Like, we just thought, like, my parents were pretty good in the sense, like, if they wanted us to be active, so if we wanted to do something, like, think beta happen. So it wasn't even like, oh, you're going to be the only girl, or are you sure you want to play that? There's these other sports, or like, it was kind of like, oh, that's so cool. Like, when do you play? Or like, when's, like, you know? So I think growing up, we were pretty lucky. Like, my parents made us feel like no matter who we were or something, if we wanted to do it, they would try to make it happen. And so I think when my sister played, it was kind of like, you know, and at primary school, I didn't knew no different. Like, I just went and played, and that was normal to me. That was the sport I played. But it wasn't probably until I went to a private school after primary school for 2 years, went to boarding school. And when I rocked up and I went to the rugby training, like, I saw it was advertised, so I rocked up to rugby training. And they got there and they, like, told me, oh, sorry, girls aren't allowed to play rugby. This is only for boys. And I was like, hey, like, I was like, what do you mean? Like, I've been playing rugby all primary school. Why can I not play now? And that was probably my first barrier that I realized, oh, like, girls, like, it's not normal or not common for girls to play rugby. So I stopped playing rugby for 2 years because the school I went to didn't let girls play.
Oh, wow. What was that? So did you play any sport during that time or?
Touch was a huge game that we played growing up. Us siblings, pretty fortunate to compete at a high level representing New Zealand, my sisters and I, which is pretty cool. And I probably gives me the background going into rugby, to be honest. But yeah, I did everything. Like, netball was a big sport. I played cricket, water polo, basketball, did everything other than rugby just to prove a point that I could do. Like, to those players that girls can play any sport.
Yeah. And when you, after those 2 years, did you end up joining back into rugby?
Yeah, the high school I went to Cambridge High, and they didn't have a team, but I was like, nah, like, I'm going to make a team. So my sister and I approached one of the teachers at school. I was like, hey, like, I really want to play rugby, like, even if it's sevens, like, because obviously you don't need as many players. I was like, can we start a team? So we got a team going. Grateful for the teacher at the school that, like, backed me. Like, he was, like, all for it. So they made it happen, and still to this day the school has women's rugby, and I've been coaching there for quite a few years too. Not in the recent years, but, yeah, it's pretty cool.
Damn, shout out to that teacher.
Yeah, nice.
Where did this inspiration come, or this drive for you to be able to push yourself, you and your sister, to, you know, create a rugby union team in the school and to drive, you know, yourself playing rugby at such a young age?
I don't know. Like, there was just something that, like, me playing rugby at primary school, like, I just had so much enjoyment out of it. Like, I loved it. Like, and even as a kid, like, our house was a pretty rugby mad house. Like, my dad played, like, he represented Counties Monaco. Like, he played, my brother played. Like, it was kind of like one of those things that, like, we grew up around it. We watched it. My parents would take us to, like, the Mulu games. You watch Possum up. Like, the guy Possum used to be, like, dressed up with a chainsaw at the top of, like, a cherry picker. Like, those are the things I remember as a kid. And so, like, I love that sort of side of rugby, was the connections, the people, and just watching the game and playing the game. So when I got to high school, I was like, I guess I knew I had a love for it, so I just really wanted to play it. And, like, I knew other girls were playing it, so I was like, man, like, and obviously with my sister there, like, she's not a hard-out rugby player, but, like, she played, and she, like, because she saw that we all loved it, like, we just got it started. Like, and I think, I don't know, like, when I look back and I was like, oh, it's pretty bold as a young girl at school to get, like, start a team up. Like, but then I look at it now, I'm like, man, if I'd never done that, who knows? Like, girls are playing now at that school, like, yeah, since when I was there. So who knows if they would ever got a team or not. Like,
and I'm sure a lot of those girls that would look up to you and your sister, and, you know, they're grateful for the movement that you girls made to create that rugby union team. Final question from me before we get to your next song. Who was your biggest influence in the game of rugby union?
I think I've got different ones at different stages, but I think for me, my my sister, like being a younger sibling, you want to do everything your older sibling does. My sister Brittany, like playing for Fiji, she was a huge influence for me. Growing up, I didn't even think playing for Fiji was even an option until she did it. I think, like, growing up, I wanted to play for All Blacks, like, if I'm being honest. Like, little did I know girls can't even play for the All Blacks. I didn't even know about the Black Ferns or any female rugby team. I was always like, yeah, like, used to watch, like, man, like, Luke McAllister, like, all these guys, like, Dan Carter, like, it's like, man, I'd love to be an All Black. And then, yeah, it wasn't until kind of my sister, like, got the opportunity to play for Fiji. I was like, whoa, like, and that made me realise, like, man, I would be so proud to play for New Zealand or Fiji, like, whichever one, like, the opportunity came, like, it would be very, like, a privilege to represent my family on either side. And so, yeah, like, my sister, the fact she did it made me, like, man, kind of just made me realise, man, it's possible. But then even, like, over the recent years, her husband, Seta, like, has been, like, a huge influence for me. Like the two of them, to be honest, like, now, so, like, they're people that really have helped me through my journey, understanding things and just part of professionalism and, like, things you go through and, like, even my training side of thing through COVID, like, Seta really helped me heaps with that side of it and, like, that was pre-playing for the draw and, like, those opportunities came. Like, he's, like, somebody that I just really, I put in my eyes, really look up to. Like, he's represented at such a high level. Like, to be able to represent Fiji and the All Blacks, like, New Zealand, that's unreal. Like, wow. That's a dream of mine that he's, like, you know, done, yeah. Which is so cool.
I forgot that was your brother-in-law. It's Tamani Valu, yeah?
Yes, it's Tamani Valu. Yes, he is. I love if he taught me a bit more about how he does all that. And even knowing your worth, like, that's the biggest thing that they've influenced me on is, like, just knowing who you are and you're the rugby player too. Like, you know, don't settle for anything less. There's obviously been a lot of other people through the journey, but there are two that, like, are close to me and,
yeah, beautiful. And before we get to your draw journey and representing Fiji, after your brother's accident, what was your thought process around getting back into rugby, knowing that that's, you know, how the accident happened?
Yeah, I think it was one of those things that I didn't think twice about it. I knew it was there, but the more you thought about it, it was never going to do you any good. It definitely was a hard barrier to get over. And even still now, there's things that I will do, like even the malls, things that, like, it didn't even happen that way. But if I find myself in an awkward situation or, like, I try not to think about it because it's not something you want to think about. But yeah. I get the little ugh sometimes. And I had to explain it to some people sometimes so that they understand it. But, like, you know, I'm saying, I'm all good. It's just, like, one of those things that, but, yeah, I think it was more for my parents the hardest thing, which I get. I'm not a mother, and hopefully one day I will have my own children. But as kids, you're like, oh, yeah, whatever. You're overreacting, mum and dad, a little bit. Like, you're just wrapping me in cotton wool, but I'm all good. But they've just had this life-changing event through a sport that we all play, and it's affected their only son that's, you know, loves rugby too. So for them to have their little girls playing rugby, that still was kind of hard. My sister definitely, she kind of stopped playing, had took some time away from it, and she ended up having babies, which was really cool. But, like, for me, I was still young. I was still, I really wanted to, like, I was just getting started a little bit. Like, I was like, but they kind of, like, mum didn't come and watch for quite a while. They dealt with it in their own way. But my brother, so, like, he's awesome. He's like, yeah, go play. Like, he was kind of like the one that he still comes to my games now. Like, he just knows it was one of those freak things that could have happened anytime, like walking down the street, you know. It was just those things that, like, and he's like one of my biggest supporters and comes to my games. And 100% my parents now, like, they're so proud. They'll never say it, even my grandparents, even, like, sometimes they might never say it, but they're, like, proud of what I've been able to achieve in the in the last few years.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll get some of their reactions when we talk about your journey through international footy and the Drill. But you're listening to Sam and T's Summer Sit-Downs, and this week we're joined by Jade Coates, who has represented Fiji in rugby union, and that's what we're about to chat about. Jade, after playing in New Zealand and playing a bit of rugby, you got to represent the Drua heading over to Fiji when they came into the Super W competition. What was that feeling like when you decided to head over to Fiji and represent the Drua?
Yeah, I didn't believe it at first, to be honest. Like, I got contacted and I was like, yeah, right. Like, I hadn't seen anything about the Drua in the media. Like, there was nothing. I was like, oh, this is just like a joke. Kind of just waited. I didn't tell anyone. Like, I had a job at the time and I was like, mentioned it to them, but I was like, hey, probably won't even go ahead, but just letting you know. And they fully supported it. They're like, oh, that's so cool. But they also, like, because I work for Waikato Rugby Union, they're like, oh, we haven't heard anything about, like, you know. And I was like, so I was a bit nervous. I was like, what am I getting myself into? And then I literally, like, announcement the day before I, like, flew out, there was an announcement. And I was like, oh, like, it was a big relief that, like, the Drua actually were, like, I was actually flying to the right team. And so, yeah, like, I still can't even believe it. Like, at the time, you know, like, when they say one, like, when opportunities, like, pop up, you should take them and grab them with both hands. And I think, yeah, I just did that. Like, didn't know anything about it. Like, was kind of going in quite blinded. But when you look back at it now and, like, one of the highest capped players for the Drua, it's like crazy to think, like, man, I'm so grateful I took that opportunity and was in a position to be able to.
Were there any challenges when you first moved over to Fiji?
Yes, the first year we were based in Australia, so we I met the team in Australia. They'd done like some training before, but we were fully based in Australia, so the whole time we camped together for, I don't even know how many months now, a few months. So that was a challenge because it was like, I knew nobody. I walked into like the camp and it was like, voila, everyone looks the same. I don't know how I'm going to remember everyone's names. Like, I was so nervous. But yeah, like, there was definitely a lot of challenges, but it was really cool. Like, even like the first, oh my gosh, like I flew with one other girl from New Zealand and we hopped on the plane and I told the manager, yeah, I'll be landing at this time, blah, blah, you guys will be good to pick me up. And they're like, yeah, yeah, no worries, all good. Like, and so I like landed in Brisbane and like messaged the manager, like, hey, we just landed. Like, she's like, landed where? I was like, Brisbane. She's like, already? I was like, yes. She said, oh, we're still at training. Sorry. Can you try and find a way to get to the... My friend and I were like, oh my goodness, what have we got ourselves into? Like, but from the start, I always said, expect the unexpected. Like, going into it, you had to. Like, we ended up catching this train 2 hours to where we're staying. And like, this lucky, I've done a bit of like travel around Europe and stuff, but this other girl's like, oh my gosh, thank goodness, like you're with me. I would have been lost. I would like learned my lesson pretty fast, like expect the unexpected, just go with the flow.
The Drua had some success pretty much straight away, winning two consecutive titles, and I just watching the crowd's reaction in Suva when you guys won that first semi-final as well against the Force last year, like that went off. Like, sum up, you know, winning those titles with the women and the Fijian community and crowd getting behind the Fijiana team.
Man, to go into a competition brand new, go unbeaten and like to top the Waratahs that have like never lost a game, like who won it 5 years in a row, was pretty like unimaginable. Like, we went in as underdogs and then next minute we became the target. So it was like, it was unbelievable, to be honest. And to be honest, everything we went through, like, never thought that would be possible. Like, we went through some pretty hardship times during that time, and like to come out and still get the result. But my biggest thing is we were the lucky ones that were part of that team that first year, and the players before us, like what they've gone through to get to where we are now was unreal. And I credit those players because they had to overcome a lot as a female in Fiji. And I think they're not forgotten about, but all the attention's been on us in the last few years, but those players before us really paved the way for us to be able to do what we did. But yeah, winning back to back even was unreal. Like, to back it up was pretty crazy. There's a lot that happens behind the scenes people don't see, and you know, it's the off-field stuff that we have to deal with. To even field a team each week, like, was unreal to be able to win it. And like you mentioned, man, that's a game I will never forget, against the Force last year, to host the semi-final in Fiji on home soil. From going the first year, never getting a home game, to getting to the second, to get a home semi-final, like, to sell out crowd, like, honestly, I've played Japan, France, New Zealand. I've never experienced a game like that with the crowd like that. Like, you see it at the men's game, but for a women's game, it was like goosebumps material. Like, the crowd was unreal. They were there to watch us, and like, we put on a performance. And like, man, I think, yeah, it's crazy.
I'll never forget when Buna made that break down the length of the field try, and the crowd around Suva were up on their feet cheering. Like, it was that loud. It was definitely in the commentary box. It was special just to take a seat back and look around at what you girls have created. Has that changed the perception of, especially the male community in Fiji, what your team has achieved?
I definitely think so. Like, you'll still get the older generations that will be the way they are. Like, that's just the way it is. It's here in New Zealand and lots of countries. But I think we've definitely churned heads of other people. Fijians are really good to be the first ones on board when you're winning, and not so much when you're not winning. But the fact we have now a community of people that come and watch us, and like, I feel like we've inspired a lot of people to actually give it a go, or it's not even just rugby, but to give something a go they might not have done before. It's pretty cool. And like, yeah, even the men's drawer team, like, a lot of people compare us because we both started at the same time, but they play in a totally different competition. Like, and I take my hat off to those boys that put in, like, you know, I'm very close with a lot of them, and they support our women's team so much, and we're so lucky to have a team like that. And like, I give the men credit. They've really come in leaps and bounds in the competition that they've been a part of. And I think, like, it's not just in the women's space, but just Pacific Islanders in general. It's pretty cool to be role models for younger players or younger children to actually want to play sport and be active, because that's a huge thing, like, in the islands.
Yeah, you definitely are a role model, and you must be pretty proud to be a part of rugby union, Fijian rugby union history, and also being an inspiration to a lot of the Fijian girls in playing rugby union. But another person who would be pretty proud of you is your Bumbu, your grandmother. What was her reaction like when she was watching you represent the motherland, Fiji?
Well, she's like on Facebook, shares everything.
Sounds like my mum.
Yeah. Trying to get the younger generation. Like, but she's funny. Like, we got to play Oceania's 2022 in New Zealand, and she actually got to come up to Auckland and watch me play live, which was like, it gave me tears coming off the field to see my Bumbu there, like, with the Fijian flag, so proud to be there. Like, we won that competition. Like, we made history that year, winning like the highest points in an international match. And it was my birthday too. Like, it was just like all those things in that competition. And it's like, she was there to watch it and experience it alongside my dad. Like, was like, yeah, like, because you never know when those opportunities come, because, you know, when you represent, it's not necessarily close to home or like, you know, but for her to come to a game live and watch me play for Fiji was like pretty, yeah, unreal. A memorable moment, that's for sure.
That's so cool. And I also want to give a big shout out to that caretaker who got you to play with the boys and when you were back in primary school. So huge shout out to him. Now, I'm going to ask you a quick funny question or a fun question. But before then, have you ever thought about playing rugby league?
Here he is. We can't have a conversation to any of our union talent without this bloke trying to recruit.
But the plug in.
I'm only saying because New Zealand Warriors, NRLW, they're opening a team, and I'm sure you know you'd make a good lock, second rower, even a centre maybe.
One of the league guys.
No, don't buy into it, Jay. Don't listen to him. You don't need to answer that question. Just go, oh, thanks, T. Well, let's go to your fun question.
Let's hear more. So the recruitment manager from someone in the rugby league world has already planted some seeds. All right, nice. It's good to know we're doing our job.
No, well, if there's anyone out there with the league contract offers, but I'm full committed to union at the moment. Really want to go to a World Cup.
At the moment.
That's a big goal of mine.
Well said.
Like I said, one door closes, another one opens, and take opportunities with two hands.
With two hands, that's the one. All right, so the world is about to end tomorrow. If the world was about to end tomorrow, you get one final dinner. Well, the storms that we had last night were unreal.
Yeah.
But you get one final dinner. Now, all the meals are from Fiji. What is being served for dinner?
Oh, that's a good one. One meal. That's too hard. There's so many.
Oh, you could put a whatever.
Like an entree, a main, and a like.
Oh, let's go with the three. Is it three settings? Entree, main, and dessert.
Three settings.
I love a good lamb rolo. Like, lamb rolo is good.
What's that? Is that a?
It's like the rolo leaves the green, and it's like soaked in the lamb. It's like a.
Oh, is that similar to like
the taro leaves?
The taro leaves in that.
Yeah,
nice.
That's good. Or some polisami, which is like the corned beef and the coconut cream wrapped in the
taro leaves.
And then I love my Bumble's chicken curry with roti. That's just like.
I like that.
It's good.
I love the chicken curries. Nice. And then for dessert, do they have Fijian desserts?
Desserts.
More curry.
Do you remember it's just like some bumble cow with tea? Like,
what's that?
It's like fried bread, kind of like.
Oh, yeah.
It's like a scony, like deep fried thing. It's great.
Well, it's been an absolute honor having you here on Nijin Footy and being able to dive deep into your journey and your connection to your homeland. And, you know, you are an inspiration. You are a role model. And, I've really enjoyed our chat today. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a privilege and, very grateful.
This show was produced on the lands of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation.